windy today.
Oh, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink. Welcome to Brookings Cafe. There's just no telling who might be here today as we venture in to quench our thirst. We call it our Great American Debate. We come to the discussion in the spirit of fairness and an attempt to offer something conclusive. We don't claim to be experts, but we will strive to come to the table prepared to discuss our topic. We are going to extend invitations to those we think may offer an opposing point of view, and in some cases we may extend a challenge to specific people or groups to defend their point of view. Beware, we fact-check anything that sounds questionable, and we look dimly on mere opinions that aren't based in knowledge. We are living in a time when people are redefining gender relations. Are you a Me Too? Are you hiding under your hat because you fit that profile of men or women that is a little more outside the box from what your mother taught you? Gender relations, the new topic at the discussion at Brookings Cafe.
And I'm Lee, and I'll be hosting today at Brookings Cafe. And here's the rest of our group.
I'm Maria.
I'm Lori.
I'm Kathy.
I'm Doris.
I'm Calla.
Thank you. And I think we're going to start perhaps with the Me Too movement. I want to just share something that I saw in the New York Times just the other day. It was a self-report of 615 men. A third of them admitted to having used some harassing behavior in the past year, which totally shocked me because as an older woman went through all that bra burning and everything, I thought things were maybe a bit different. Apparently, they're not so much different. Thoughts on that? Anybody like to share?
I think we've made a lot of progress since the bra burning days, but I think that on an interpersonal basis, maybe not so much. Like in the workplace, for instance, with colleagues and so on, I think harassment is still common. I think it's so ingrained in the culture that men are on top and women are not, that I actually think that men don't even realize what privilege they have by being men because they have it from the cradle on.
I think that the third wave of feminism, which is what we're experiencing now, is a time for women to address the next sets of issues in gender relations, which include harassment on the job, which hasn't stopped, and the ability to report it. The second wave of feminism, which I was a part, worked very hard to define domestic violence, get it reported, get women to safety, teach men how not to behave in those ways, and teach women how not to allow themselves to be abused and not get out. So we have made a lot of strides in those areas, and I think what we're seeing right now with Me Too is the next wave of we need to change our behavior as a species, especially in this country, because we really are looking at this in this country. We can't affect the laws anywhere else. So I think this is an outgrowth of the third wave of feminism, which we're experiencing now.
Question for you, Calla. You said that you were involved in helping men learn other ways of behaving. Was that strictly in regard to domestic violence?
How was it?
How did it work?
Well, we caused police to do their jobs. I'm not saying we as a personal thing, but mm-hmm. women all over the country. Not working in cahoots with each other, but all working towards similar goals, like now with the Women's March. We helped the understanding that unwanted touch is assault. That's the definition of it legally, unwanted touch. But what happened was that definition didn't extend into domestic relationships, relationships between spouses. And during the second wave, we helped that definition mean people being touched in ways that were not requested. If you don't request touch, then you have been assaulted if someone touches you. Doesn't mean you've been assaulted at the level that you've been harmed, mm-hmm. but that's just simply the legal definition. And before the second wave of feminism, assault in domestic situations was seen as a, quote, special case. Even though if someone on the street blacked your eye with their fist, you would expect to be able to take charges against that person. That wasn't true in a domestic violence situation. Taking charges against the abuser, the domestic violence perpetrator, was extremely difficult. It was a long struggle to get at the point that domestic violence victims were heard and their stories were believed was the first part of that effort. And I see that effort arising now in the Me Too, where women were harmed by strangers in ways that wouldn't have been perceived as harm prior to this, but did harm them in real and personal ways.
One of the things in the survey that it was saying that about a half of women say they've been harassed just in their career. It's not even talking about their personal life. And I'm just wondering how many of us have experienced some kind of harassment. Is there anybody here who hasn't, personally or professionally? I think it's easier to ask that question sometimes. Everybody here has experienced some level of harassment. See, I think...
My career started off in a newsroom. And so at the time, which was the late 70s, early 80s, it was still a man's world. Well, the women were relegated to basically secretarial positions. Mm-hmm. And to get into management, you had to be a producer. And so I was part of that first wave of women who literally did break that glass ceiling and get us into management. So now you see news directors who are female, not nearly enough. But being an old boys club, there were always jokes. Always jokes.
Always.
Me personally, I have an Italian background. I think that sex jokes can be funny at times. They crossed lines.
One of the things that they were describing here is not so much that a single incident is so harmful, but they consider it to be abusive if it happens on a continual basis, even like a mild form like telling jokes, because you can see how that would beat somebody down over time. Especially if they felt sensitive about it.
For me, the inequities were always in the paycheck. Always in the paycheck.
Yeah.
Women were paid so much less than men because we started off at a much lower pay scale. Even as we were raised up, we were never on parity with the men.
Yeah.
Which was a little disappointing because most of us busted our butts even harder because we needed to prove ourselves.
And that's still shocking to me that we've never passed the ERA and we're still only getting, on average, around 80 cents on the dollar. That's just unbelievable. Yeah, that's a kind of harassment in a way.
In the study, this is a state issue. Last year when our state representatives, not our federal, but our state folks visited us, they denied that it existed in Oregon, but the study by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which was recently published, I think, in September, said that in 2016, that working people, and they define working people as people that work an average of 35 hours or more, receive a salary, are not self-employed, and are not in management. So they looked at working people. And across working people in Oregon, women still only earn 87 cents on the dollar. 10 cents different since 1976.
What, the 70s? Yeah.
When I last did a study that found that was true where I was living.
Yeah. There's a cafe in Australia that charges men whatever the percentage is, I think it's like 13% more than women because they're paid different. So they figure, you know what? You guys have to spend the exact same amount of money. And I think all of the proceeds from that extra money the men pay go to abused women shelters, which I think is great.
I came up in a system where the opposite was true. After college, I joined the Navy. I was a commissioned officer. The system was set up so that we women got the same promotions, held the same rank at the same time. And got the same pay as men. What we did not get were the jobs. Not only didn't go to sea and in those days didn't fly, didn't do anything really, anything operational, we would be stuck oftentimes in entry-level positions, even as much higher-ranking officers, simply because there were only a few that they passed around, administrative, personnel, positions like that.
So you had to have the operational experience to progress, and you couldn't get that?
You couldn't get operational experience because the men stated the law held them back from putting women on ships or sending them to the Naval Academy or allowing them to fly. Now, that all began changing about 4 years after I signed up. And, of course, it's a much different place now, much different place. Women are commanding ships nowadays, even combatant ships, which is I thought would never happen in my lifetime, but I'm very pleased that it has.
For me, it wasn't so much in my professional life. My professional life tended to be pretty traditional women's roles. I was a nurse, I was a massage therapist, and I was a psychotherapist. For me, it was my personal life. I'm an incest survivor, and so from pretty much the beginning on, I experienced a sense of being less than, victim, all of the baggage that goes along with having survived incest.
I don't remember a time I wasn't sexually harassed. I was raised in a traditional Catholic home. I went to Catholic schools. I still remember the nuns telling the girls, you are the occasion of sin, and that it was up to us to keep the boys in line. They can't help it. That's just how they're made. I remember as a little girl having the West Side Story Maria songs sung to me while men older than my parents wanted me to sit on their laps, and I wasn't comfortable with that. I remember when I got my first job, I had to quit because he was cornering me in the back room. I was cleaning his office. In high school, I was slut-shamed because I was considered asking for it because I was considered blonde and pretty, and I had a 20-year-old boyfriend who is now my husband, has been for a long time, but it was shameful because I was 17 and he was 20, and I feel like I was conditioned my whole life to accept less than and being abused, because in the space of 1 year, I was attempted rape when I left the Bay Area and assaulted by my uncle before the year was out. From all that, it's not hard to imagine that I went into an abusive relationship. Now, I got myself out of that relationship. The rest of the story is pretty positive because I married a man who valued me and values me to this day. But I climbed my way out. But still, it's painful. Right now, I'm in pain because it's a whole life of falling dominoes one after the other.
You know, that's one of the things that I was thinking about in getting ready to do the show here is how pervasive it was growing up and in my younger years, and I suppose it still is, actually. It was so part of the culture that I remember it wasn't even a matter of my own consciousness saying, no, this isn't right, I need to tell somebody. I just accepted it because that's how it was. And I see a lot of nodding around the room when I say that.
I too thought, well, that's just the way life is. Mm-hmm. And so I accepted many things I wouldn't accept today.
Yeah.
I accept a lot of things, or have accepted a lot of things that I would not allow my daughter to accept. Mm-hmm. So I have a similar story to Maria's. It was our next door neighbor who got me. You know, it makes you feel like you're less than. At the same time in my life, my mother abandoned us. I was the oldest of four kids, and my dad is Italian, and so I slipped into the mom role. So talk about, you know, gender roles. I was in it before I even had anything to say about it. But the things that happened to me, the things that I allowed, and frankly continue to allow because it's just not worth it sometimes to start a fight, I would not allow my daughter to put up with. And the beauty of that is that although I come from an abusive background and we put the fun in dysfunctional,
yeah,
my kids are whole and healthy. And so I really feel like for me, I have a daughter who is an advocate for people who don't have a voice. She tries to be a voice for the voiceless. My son is a kind and gentle man rather than some of the testosterone-ridden, out of balance young men that I know. So I'm happy that my experiences have enabled me to see more and to teach them a different way.
And in terms of what to do about it, I think the role of the family has got to be really primary. And in terms of long-term fixes, I mean, we still have to confront people that are out there already grown up. In the meantime, I just feel that a lot of the kind of dual standard stuff that I was raised with that is still kind of going on, like boys are expected to sow their wild oats and, you know, dad might even be kind of tacitly supporting that. And maybe even mom too. In the meanwhile, it's up to the girl to say no. But when I think about my own
birth control or to protect herself.
Right. It's all on us. And I remember what a predatory environment it was growing up through. And I see a lot of nods again, middle school and high school. I was a sitting duck because I lived alone with my father who didn't get home till 9 o'clock at night. My home was pretty close to the school. And so I had boys climbing through my windows and just all kinds of crazy, crazy situations. And it was always very predatory. And you can't in a way blame boys because what I hear is they're, you know, overridden by their hormones. But on the other hand, we have a culture that supports that instead of, in many cases, teaching them what they should do with that energy. I think women are sometimes as complicit as anybody else in the child-raising part. They give their sons permission to buy into that.
I would like to add something. I think in addition to educating men, we need to educate women because it's so often that women play the opposite role, feel they have no worth and value, feel like they can't say no, feel like it's their fault. you know, we need to help women move out of that place.
Well, I think it's really, there's a piece of this. We talk about gender relations as though it were a relationship between equal people. And in many instances where gender relations go bad or go negative in the workplace, in personal lives, what's actually happening is a power differential, because one person has the power and the other person doesn't. And whether or not that's a perception on the part of the person who doesn't have the power, in reality, unless the law and the society both say, this is not an instance when you can practice this power, it will continue. I listened to a young man from a different culture from ours talking about what would happen if his sister drove a car, and he said, on camera, I would kill her. The reporter was shocked and said, you know, what makes that right? And the young man said, that's our teaching. That's what we believe. So at the bottom of belief in our culture here, do we believe that there is a power differential that should continue to exist? I mean, wage difference absolutely continues to exist. Is that okay with us? We've had no female presidents at all. Is that okay with us? We're gradually getting women into places in power. When will there be enough women in power? When there are 50% or more women in every single governing agency, then we'll have some sort of equity available. Will there be bad women that we elect? Of course. Will there be women that don't fulfill what we want them to do? Of course. But until we get enough of them in there, we don't really have a choice. That's my feeling.
So true, so true. In terms of what else to do, I mean, I think modeling, whether we're talking about in the home or later in life, one of the things that the study talked about is how much the workplace was dictated, the culture was dictated by the immediate superiors, people who had a superior who did not put up with that stuff and modeled professional behavior were much, much less likely to harass. And in environments where there was no published policy that men were aware of, then it was, you know, whatever goes. So I think so much of it is, you know, what are people going to put up with? If it's a man seeing another man behave that way or a woman, you know, how do we get people to feel empowered to say, that's not okay with me?
I think you touched on a couple of things. I think that role modeling is very important. When Lori was talking about her daughter, I was thinking of my own daughter and my granddaughter. My own daughter is 42, and she is very self-assured, has a great career, knows who she is, and I can't imagine anyone taking advantage of her or harassing her without her standing right up to herself and just not accepting that. And my granddaughter is stronger than my daughter. I see in her someone who's very sure of who she is as a little 10-year-old. But at the same time, I worry because I see the there's a book, Too Sexy Too Soon, that was written a few years ago. We conditionalize our little girls still, sexualize them with cutesy outfits and the messages that are constantly sent on the Disney Channel. So there's those concerns, but I just feel like you can't generalize from your own personal experiences, but from my own experiences, I can see that my daughter is stronger than I was, and that my granddaughter, I foresee her being stronger than either one of us.
I'll never forget when I was 17 and in college, I went to a How to Prevent Rape workshop, and we were told in the How to Prevent Rape workshop not to dress too sexy. I think that the idea that women can control what happens to them by how they dress is not an idea that I want to see carried into the next decade. Personally, I want my daughter to be free to dress however she likes to and to never have to assume that how she dresses is going to determine how she's treated. The idea that men can walk around without shirts on, whatever they want to wear, women just don't sexualize their dress the way that men dress in a work situation, the way that men sexualize the way that women dress. And I think that, again, that we're looking at a power differential. We should have a perception that people dress this way when they go to work at this job. Maybe they have to wear a uniform. That no matter if the uniform is tight or not tight, that it's not a sexualized thing. And I see people in uniforms in waiting tables being sexualized by what they're wearing. How could that be? How could somebody who wears a uniform be wearing something that's meant to attract the attention of someone in a genderized fashion?
I think that in the case of my granddaughter, one thing. She's very fashion conscious, and she likes dressing how she dresses, and she's sure of herself in her clothes. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the constant messages that come at girls from Disney Channel, for one example, everywhere they go, about sexualizing them. That's different than being sexualized to me. It's a constant pervasive message sent to them, that makeup and all those kinds of things. And I like wearing makeup. I'm not talking of that. I like dressing up and all those things. But I'm talking about the messages that are sent to girls, that less than message that's sent to them, that their worth comes from how they look and how pretty they are. And you're such a pretty little girl. You're so beautiful. Oh, you look just like your mother. Those kinds of messages are pervasive, and they're subliminal in a way that I think is can be damaging.
And part of that message is, you know, do men approve of you, how you look? And that's your worth is based on that so often.
Well, also, we have bodies that are all different. Some of us have big boobs. Some of us can't hide that we have big boobs. My daughter's got a huge rack, you know. She's just got these ginormous things that come at you. Well, she's just got them. It's not that she's trying to flaunt them, but she's got them. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's also a body thing.
Absolutely.
You know, our bodies are our bodies. That's it. You know, we like them. They get us where we're supposed to go. They're great, but they're not just out there to be toys for men. I mean, it's just, that's not what they're there for. They're to get us around.
I think it's still true today that women are judged more on how they look than on what they can do, or how well they can think or analyze a problem, what they can contribute to society other than their looks and maybe some babies.
Has anybody here read Naomi Wolf's Vagina, the book Vagina?
Mm-mm.
You were talking, Calla, about power. And for me, it's always, always, always about power. It literally is who's on top. And this book is fascinating to me because it talks about physiologically what we're made of. Not many of us know all of the bits and pieces that go into our nether regions, but it's absolutely fascinating. Women have so many nerves from our genital area that are attached to our spinal cord, and it goes straight up to our brains. One of the things that happens when women are raped is that it breaks this neurological kind of connection. And so physiologically, it really changes us emotionally, physiologically, physically. It just changes us. The premise in this book is that as wars started, part of the way that armies found to really subjugate people was to not only, you know, get rid of all the guys, but they systematically raped women. And that is still going on. And that's scary to me, because that ugly energy that is that needs to go away. I know that when we're at war, we have our bloods raised and people get into craziness. I don't understand it, but I know that it happens. But I see bits and pieces of that ugliness eking into our culture today. I mean, the fact that we've got a man sitting in the Oval Office who says it's okay to grab a woman by the pussy is absolutely intolerable. That's just
unbelievable.
So not okay on so many levels.
And we've seen also that men of growing conscience, because it's true that people can grow and change. I believe that thoroughly. We just saw several men that we would have judged from the outside, at least, to have been responsible, upright, righteous men, say that behavior was wrong. I did it. And in the case of several of the people who have recently resigned from Congress, said, you know, their accusers, the people who came forward about their experiences, their accusers were like 8 or 9 or 10 different women at different times in these men's lives. They said, this is what you did to me. The man said, that was wrong, and it's right that I step down, not I'm going to be president of the United States next. And that's been very difficult, because we've had men that we really think are moving forward in righteous behaviors say, I behaved in a terrible way, and it's right that I step down. So we have the man who won't be moved, except we're going to move him, and the men that just get moved out. And it's a kind of a hard thing to hear. We just saw the director of the New York City Ballet 71 years old, had to step down. And from a news standpoint, we hear that these things are just surfacing, when in reality, the women who were affected, and in the case of the legislators too, they took that information to someone at the time, but there was no recourse for them. They never had anything that they could say that anybody could support them in a way that would say to the man, this is wrong, make recompense now, and stop the behavior. Those things are steps that could have been taken, and unfortunately they weren't. So we're seeing Harvey Weinstein is the worst example that we have in the popular press, but then we see the director of the New York City Ballet also abused his position of power, and we see our legislators who are stepping down because they did the same thing. Maybe not at the level or not the exact kind of assault, but it's still assault.
That's one thing that I find that's hard for people, seems to be hard for the media at large, people at large to understand. Why didn't these women come forward before? It's because they did. In my own personal experiences, I told each and every time that something happened to me, and each and every time I wasn't believed. You learn from that. You learn to shut your mouth and step down and just say, this is what it is. You're just going to have to move forward, because it's a double injury. It's not the assault itself was bad enough, but when you go to people you trust and you love and you tell them what happened and they turn around and either call you a slut or I don't believe you, what happened to you, this isn't who I thought you were, those kinds of things, you learn. So
what did you do to elicit the behavior? That's one of the frame ones, right? What did you do to cause him to whatever he did? Yeah.
It's all your fault. Somehow you caused this to happen to you.
Well, my granny said that when Uncle Tony was in the pool, he acted a little strange. And I go, yeah, like I was really young. I didn't know what was going on, but he was exposing himself. She said, okay, yeah, that's too bad, and didn't really say anything more about it. And Uncle Tony continued to come over to the house and go in the swimming pool and all that stuff. And it was up to me to make sure I wasn't in the swimming pool at the same time. And like that was, I think these things are real betrayals by the people that should be protecting us.
Slight change of subject, but yeah. I was working. I want to be real clear that I don't think every single man on the planet is horrible. In fact, I think it's a very small minority. I know culturally we're all sort of complicit or have been, and now a lot of us are opening up eyes and ears and talking about it. Not all men are bad. However, I did work with one who was particularly horrendous. I was pregnant and not sharing that with anyone, but I was a little nauseous. And so I was wearing wristbands. You in the Navy, I'm sure, know about those wristbands to keep you. And I was in a meeting with my boss. He looked at my wristband and he looked at me and he said, "You bitch."
What is a wristband? I don't know about
that. I was pregnant.
And
he knew I was pregnant. Mm. And so that kind of stuff happened a lot. And so what do you do? I mean, what did I do? I didn't do anything. I kept my mouth shut, and because I needed the job, I was pregnant. And, you know, that kind of interpersonal conversation makes it really difficult to trust or want to work hard for anyone. So, I mean, motivating people in a workplace is better done with honey than with vinegar, I think.
That's what they tell us, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Except that people who lose their jobs over bad behavior, as many people have recently done, they actually have learned the lesson. Mm-hmm. They've been given like the big information. This is not tolerated. So I think that, you know, we can teach, and we talked about teaching all these years, and we can still teach. But there's an interactive contract that goes on with teaching, and that's called learning. And if a person has demonstrated in a work situation that they're not learning behaviors that are make the workplace a cohesive place that people all go to work, they don't go to for other reasons, then that person probably shouldn't be working there anymore. As we see, several people, prominent people, are no longer working, period.
Yeah. You were talking about how all men aren't bad, and that's certainly true. But one of the things that I was a little dismayed about when I was talking to some of my male friends about the whole movement and all is the excuse is, well, things were different then. And I've heard that several times. Anybody got any reactions to that one?
Things were different then.
They were.
That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an alternative fact. It's a fact. Things were different then.
Yeah.
And culturally, we were very repressed. And so I think that now people are talking about stuff. Women are saying, me too. I was raped when I was 12. I was abused when I was younger. I am the victim of incest. I mean, just around this table, the stories. And that wasn't talked about. So things have changed. I mean, that things were different.
They were different, but are they excused because they were different then?
There's no excuse. It's just a fact. It was. I mean, you can't go back. The one thing you can't change is the past.
I think women have always been responsible for reporting their own assaults, for trying to correct the problem, no matter how minor it was or how major it was. The responsibility for bringing it to the forefront has always been with us. A male who witnessed the same thing, who witnessed an event, would not be held accountable for tattling, so to speak, for saying anything about it, but the woman would. In past years, women didn't feel empowered enough to do that. We were repressed, and we behaved like we were repressed. Things are changing now. I don't know that we're necessarily reaching a critical mass just yet, but we're getting there, where more women will speak up, and that's the difference.
It does seem like the Me Too movement is all about demanding accountability.
Yeah, but when you have things like the Stanford rape case, where a young man who is so promising in as a swimming athlete should be treated differently because he raped a woman behind a dumpster while she was unconscious, I think everyone should read her letter to the court. It is absolutely heartbreaking and honest and real. That is just an example today of how things, we haven't really changed very much, but at least in this case, there was an outcry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been before. So.
Or the nun who was, I think she was 85, and she was raped in her hospital bed. And they said, well, the blood was probably there because, she cut herself with a paper cut, and the ejaculate was probably dirty sheets that came through the wash wrong. And they just made all these excuses to get away with it.
I worked in a hospital laundry once when I was in college. There's no excuse for
dirty sheets.
On a dirty sheet.
I do see, though, that I can say over this last year, I've met amazing women who are strong, empowered. We all are a product of our lived experiences. And so when we talk about where we are now, I know that for myself, I'm a much stronger woman than I was as a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 40-year-old, even a 50-year-old. I feel like I've come all the way into my own, and I've surrounded myself with strong women who are articulate, intelligent, and together we lift ourselves up. So I feel like, for me, the Women's March coming up on the 20th is a celebration of that. It's a celebration of this last year where I've met such amazing women who have become my close friends, who I love dearly. And together, that critical mass, I feel like we're building that critical mass. You know, it sounds cheesy, but one woman at a time. I mean, I'm amazed at how I've grown living in this community and the friends that I've made, both men and women.
And it's an interesting thing that I see happening. My age group is retired. We know 25 or 30 years of a person's life. So it's the last third of our lives, practically. As a retired person, it's been very interesting to me in this particular community of Brookings, Oregon, to have met so many evolved men. So I know that the men of our generation are not all like our current.
They're not all Justin
person
Trudeau.
In chief. What?
They're not all. I thought you were talking good. I thought you were saying they're not all Justin Trudeau.
No,
Justin.
Justin is the next generation. He actually was raised by people who and came up through a world that said, we need to protect our young. We need to make sure that they learn that power is something that you grow into and use, not that it can be usurped by somebody in the schoolyard, in the dance studio, during an audition. Your power cannot be usurped by someone else. You cannot allow that. And if someone attempts it, you must report it. Those of us who came through the second wave as feminists, we tried to teach that to our children, and we hope that we have. I think it makes a big difference, and men have evolved. Women have evolved, too. We're talking about the evolution of women right here at this table. Things were different then. That's evolution in social behaviors. And so we see men in Brookings, a great many men, who are, in fact, quite evolved men. They, in fact, are feminist, and they're not afraid to say it at 70. I would be very surprised if my daughter ever dated someone who wouldn't say to me, I'm a feminist. Because for her, that's a bright white line. But how do we get to there? We actually are changing the world. One moment at a time.
And in some ways, we have Donald Trump to thank for that. Because you can't...
That's true.
No, seriously. I feel like the light was turned on and the cockroaches are out. And if you can see them, you can step on them. So I thank him.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I kind of wish that there was a man or men here, because I would be really interested to hear what the process is like for a man who was raised, say, in our older generation in the old-fashioned way, and what they went through in terms of their own conscious evolution to come to being a feminist. That would be so interesting.
Well, maybe they'll get to say next time.
Yeah, right. Or our third time if we have one. That'd be great. So I'd like to, you know, throw the conversation open to other things besides the Me Too movement in terms of gender relations. Anything else that anybody'd like to get into today? Just feel free to fold that in as we talk, all right?
I had a thought earlier. We were talking about families, mm-hmm. raising children and being responsible for the way the children come up.
Right.
And whether how feminist they are or not. And one of my thoughts at the time was they have so many other influences, families do, outside their own selves and their own bringing up. They have the schools that their kids go to, and they have the churches that they go to. My way of thinking about churches is that there are enough really conservative ones out there, and maybe some that wouldn't be considered so conservative, who really still uphold the women are lesser, they're helpers, they're not the main show, men are the main show. Everything from women belong in the choir and men belong at the podium speaking.
Original sin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know when I was growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer and even maybe a judge one day. And my father said, well, you should really be a school teacher because then you can be home in time for your kids to get off the bus and you'll be there, you know. So a woman could be a secretary, a nurse, or what was the third thing? Secretary, nurse, or teacher.
Teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, have we come a long way? I mean, in those ways, we can obviously go for any career we want, but have things changed that much? I mean, I hear a lot of people in the younger generation saying, oh, you know, I can have casual sex whenever I want, and people our age saying that too, as long as it's protected and thoughtful. And there's nothing wrong with that. And yet I have this feeling that there's this undercurrent, as you've been talking about, where people are sort of still brainwashed to want that approval from outside of themselves as women, rather than being self-confident in that sense of making their own choices really freely.
I think Maria said something about it, although she was pointing specifically to the Disney Channel. Popular culture, which is on basically the sell everything to everybody all the time model, really pushes the ideas. I don't know why the advertisers are so sold, or the people who make goods are so sold on the idea that this power differential should continue, that it's good for business. And that's, I think, an underlying message. It's certainly a message directly from our current president. It's good for business for me to behave this way. It was good for ratings for me to behave this way when I was a video star. And now it's good for business for me to behave this way. And what's good for business is continuing the power differential that we're talking about ending. So I would be interested to find out, does anybody think about that as part of capitalism? Is it inherent in capitalism or not?
Well, if you persuade somebody that they're lacking, that there's something lacking about them, and that you have something to fill that lack, then obviously that's going to be good for their business.
Yeah, I think I know in the fairly recent past, it was known that car dealers, certain ones in particular, were marketing their cars more towards women. They were asking women what women wanted in cars. They were designing them that way because they had discovered that women make most of the buying decisions. I think that's true for the things you see advertised on television, especially during daytime hours. Many of them are women's products. Women represent a vulnerable market out there. Business is not going to stop doing business that way if it makes them money.
Yeah, it's such a conundrum because, you know, you can't keep your children away from media, and the media is just brainwashing everybody from such a young age.
You can limit it, though. I mean,
For sure.
My kids were born in 92 and 94, so you know, cable was out, we limited it. We had one television. We watched as a family, and generally we would watch movies. We didn't watch the popular things. I'm probably the only person on this planet who's never seen a Survivor. We just didn't do it. We did family stuff. And I talked earlier about breaking those things. You know, I come from a broken home. My parents divorced. And again, it was a very dysfunctional home. I mean, I was 12 years old and I took on the role of the mom. So this was it wasn't a fun, easy household to grow up in. There was a lot of emotional violence. There was some physical violence. I was molested by our neighbor. It was not a fun time to grow up. And I did not want that for my kids. So I was so conscious about really making, and I was a late mom. I didn't have my kids till I was 35 and 37. So I was really conscious and aware that I wanted my kids to have more emotional confidence than I had. And we slept with our kids. You know, I nursed them till they didn't want mommy milk anymore, and we slept with them. I asked my son one day how he would have felt if he would have, you know, like all of his friends, he would have had to have gone into his own bedroom by himself. And he said, I would have thought you didn't like me. And I would have not wanted to be with you because you didn't like me. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. I guess you just become aware, work through it that way. Right, Maria?
Yes. And I was just thinking about what you're saying. I was saying, well, no, I had my kids when I was 20 and 21, and mine wasn't intentional, but we lived in an 8x35 trailer. So TV wasn't an option because I wanted them out of the house, go outside and play. So they were raised unintentionally that way. And I think that has an effect on who they are as adults and how they've raised their children. But the thing that we didn't have when we were raising our children that we have to deal with now is social media and technology. And I was just thinking about that to switch the subject a little bit. But when we're talking about media, the effect of technology, I mean, my kids, my grandkids are connected to those phones and the games that they play with each other, the Minecraft or whatever it is, those kinds of things. But their technology, texting instead of talking. You know, I had to get good at texting because neither one of my kids really want to talk on the phone, but I text with them every day. Those kinds of things, what effects are those having? And I think about bullying and that power thing. I am pretty active on social media. I find that Catholic upbringing and all those things, constant sense of conflict for me because I'll get bullied, might be too strong of a word. I'll have certain people on Facebook come after me in a very power struggle type way. And a lot of times I just have just backed off because I didn't want to get in a rabbit hole back and forth forever because they just won't let go. But then I'm thinking, okay, are you backing away from this conversation because you're going against your lived experiences where this is how you always dealt with men or how you've always dealt with when there was a conflict you're not comfortable with? Or are you backing off for good reasons? And, you know, that's a whole nother level in all of this is media, technology, and what effect that has on this whole gender issue.
For sure. And
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Is everybody walking in a women's march or in support of it? And if so, why are you marching in the women's march? Why are we having a women's march this year?
Now, who was it who talked about? Was it you?
Maria started.
What you said was just brilliant about people learning or showing their self-awareness and self-confidence. We are here. I'm synopsizing badly, but anyway.
Yeah, I think the we are here is one of the reasons that I support it. And if I can make it, we'll march in it. I don't live in Brookings, but I don't think there's one in my town, so I'll come down here. Yeah, to me, it's to show that we are here and we're not going away. We're going to make a statement and we're going to keep making statements. We're going to keep working and don't ignore us. I think the Women's March last year, the day after the inauguration, was tremendous. I remember how shocked people were at how many people were there and how peaceful it was. I think that really lays down a marker that says that there are other ways to live life. There are other topics to be aware of. Don't forget that women are more than half the population, and we do things differently, sometimes better, frequently better.
There's a song that Holly Near sang that says, we are gentle, angry people,
mm-hmm.
and we are marching for our lives. I don't think women are necessarily better than men, but I think that culturally we've seen that we carry the culture forward and that we change it in ways that men have not. I think that we are saying, as we march as women, that no matter if we disagree with each other in many different ways, we can be cohesive and say, that's enough. You stop it. We're changing things now. Even though when it comes to the moment of how we're changing things, we may not agree. We actually have to continue to discuss. It's an outward expression of women's continuing discussion with each other and the people who love us joining in on those discussions, and the men who are, in fact, evolved joining in on those discussions rather than coming to blows over differences in political belief.
I think women, each woman, is marching for her own truth. I've already expressed why I'm marching, but I'm also marching for my mother-in-law, who's lived here since 74. She was an activist. She marched against nuclear war on Chetco Avenue back in the day. I've just lost her recently, but she would be up front and center in that march. And so I'm marching for her, too. She was that role model that raised me up. And so I think we each are marching for our own truth. I hope that everyone listening knows that you are welcome to march in the Women's March for your own truth. We hope to see you because I think it will be a valuable experience.
And for me, as an older woman, I march because as a role model.
I'm marching because last year on election, the day before the election, I held a Hillary for President sign on the corner of Chetco and Oak, and I was verbally abused. I had people steer their cars towards me. I can't tell you what I was called because we're a family show here. Suffice it to say that the C word was used often. When the Women's March happened, or when it was going to happen, I went up to Portland because I have a friend up there who said, come on up to Portland. And when I saw the energy and I felt the energy, I thought, OMG. Got to do something. I got fired up. And the reason that I went was because I thought, you know, it's not okay for me to be standing here exercising my free speech and to be abused. And so if I have to keep standing up and saying, I'm here, it's not just your point of view, it's all of us who live here, then I'm going to keep standing up. And so that's why I'm marching, because there are so many points of view, and everybody wants the same thing. Everybody basically wants to be happy. They want to have a nice partner. They want to have a nice home. They don't want to have to worry about everybody. You know, we all want the same thing. And so it's just a matter of recognizing that it's not a football game. We're not on rival teams. We're all in this together, you know. So that's why I want to march, because you're right, I'm still here.
And people here in this community take care of each other. That should be our national character. Not we fight all the time, but that we take care of each other.
You know, the American government class that Indivisible has been sponsoring at the Redwood Theater through Tim Patterson. Thank you very much, Tim. There was a really interesting class where it talked about how Americans felt about taking care of others. Basically, they were talking about welfare. And Europeans and Americans feel completely different about welfare. Americans believe that you should take care of yourself. And it's just a predominantly cultural thing. And so that's why it's been so difficult for us to get, you know, universal health care or any kind of, basic human needs kind of a program in place. Because Americans don't, honestly, Callie, I was shocked when I saw that. We don't, as a nation, we don't.
We're changing that.
Yes.
We're marching. We're changing that. We're telling people, we do care for each other, and we're going to care for each other. This is how adults behave, and children, but adults especially.
I think one of the things that this conversation brings up for me is how the difficulties that we as women face in terms of harassment is often visited on people who are less advantaged, people that are poor. I know when I was trying to put myself through school, and I was pretty poor and pretty young and pretty unsophisticated, my school was on one side of aerospace in LA, and I lived on the other. And then halfway through the semester, my car gave up and I had no way to fix it. And I actually had to hitchhike through that area of town every day to get to school and back. and it was kind of awful. It wasn't more than, I would say on average, two or three times a week, I'd get some kind of ugly pass. Some people exposed themselves. It was really rough. And I think I was so unprotected because I was a poor person. So there's the aspect of the things we can do besides the Women's March. You know, we can be part of Indivisible or any number of other groups that are operating on a political level. But is there anything we can do in terms of outreach to those people that are most vulnerable, or other thoughts you have about, you know, how we can participate in this little tiny village of ours?
I think we support women's businesses. I think the more women's businesses, and go up and down Chetco Avenue, and all the banks are manned by women. They're womaned by women. There are tons of stores that are owned and run, operated by women. And I think that if we support each other in a way that's beneficial to all of us, and economically we're capitalists here, you know, you gotta pay the mortgage. I think that's an important thing for us to do.
And I think continuing the human contract between one human and another that involves the other person, if we think of people who are the most vulnerable, those folks who are the most vulnerable, that we give them that we make sure that we listen to their full voice, they will perceive their full person. The Women's March for me is about that, because are we going to just talk about this kind of care with each other? Are we actually going to walk the walk? I'm very interested in us continuing to move forward in learning to walk the walk. I think it was really different before. I think we've come a long way. I think to think of the current administration as a defeat is wrong. I think it's a wake-up call, but it's not a defeat. We should not stand in fear. We're going to keep moving forward. With us now are the young, who were in a safe space before. They were in school. They didn't have to age as quickly as we did. They never have had to grow up as quickly. Now they are growing up, and they're at the place where they can also step into the political fray. So we're going to see those young people out in the march also, not just us old ladies and our old men.
That's true. And I think that there's a saying, and I wish I could remember where I picked this one up, but it's kind of the rubber band effect, I think of it as we move towards higher consciousness, we'll make a big expansion out, like I think we did during the Obama era, and then the forces that are not happy with that kind of do the rubber band snapback, and then you revisit this sort of ugly place that we have with Mr. Trump. And then that is kind of the last hurrah of this sort of lower consciousness way of being. From here, you go into a more, dare I say, a progressive mode again, conscious mode, let's say.
Moving from the masculine to the feminine.
Well, I think that the election really has turned out to be an opportunity. I've met, as I've already said, several women that are now close friends, but I've also met men who are now friends. And I've met people that think completely different than me, that I've stretched myself to reach out to, that we've engaged in conversations that have been uplifting. It goes back to that we're all in this together, and we don't have to be tribal. We don't have to be live in these dichotomies. We actually can seek common ground, civil discourse. And I've worked hard on that this last year. And I don't think that that would have happened if I hadn't been really inspired to live my own truth. I just don't think it would have happened.
It's so important to me that this doesn't turn into, you know, general man bashing as part of the way we like to polarize almost everything in this society these days. It's important that we listen to each other, whether it's the opposite sex or the other political party or whatever's out there, to keep those dialogues fresh and open and real.
Well, I've noticed, I've been sitting here thinking in the last few minutes of conversation, that we're all being very feminist and very appreciative and very careful about bringing men along with us, about educating them. And I think, frankly, we also need to be tougher, not just inside ourselves, but on men. Men who don't see it, whether they're abusers or not, certainly on abusers, predators. But I think that simply being nice and inviting people to join us isn't going to take us far enough. We need to go out there and make some waves and bring people along that way. Educate people, but sometimes you have to do it by knocking them over.
That's true. Can we do both?
I think so.
We just need to elect more women is what we need to do, and we need to organize. It's all about knowing what the goal is and organizing to get there. You just work backwards and you figure out how to get there. The most important thing that we can do is to put forward qualified, electable women.
And feminist men, and I'm not talking about carrying them along, I'm talking about raising the bar. Because when we elect a man to office and when we elect a woman to office, the bar should be pretty high. We want them to represent our highest ideals, not what will win the battle. And I think a lot of the electoral politics that have been going on have been, who's going to win? We need a candidate that's going to win. And I think the Women's March is about, we need candidates who represent us. We need governance that represents us. We don't want to put someone in office because they can, quote, win or lose. We want them in office because we want them to represent us and for them to carry the idea of public service into the service on behalf of the rest of us who help them get there. So I think women are a force to be reckoned with. I think that the Women's March says that quite clearly. We, in fact, show up at the polls. In fact, in Alabama, we defeated a man who should never be in governance at all. Women did that. But we, in fact, are stepping up and raising the bar on our own behaviors so that we take our power into the places where it should be, which is in every house of government across the whole United States.
You know, you talk about having people in place who will govern for us, who really are our voices. I'm somewhat of a cynic because I do have a background. We were talking earlier. You said that some advertising is targeted towards women. I can tell you that I ran the promotion department for an NBC affiliate for quite some time, and we targeted day parts. We were selling the newscast, right, because we needed to get eyeballs. So I would create a promo for How Safe Is Your Salad for women, and then another one to air in primetime. So targeted marketing and advertising is part of what we are. And so when I say we need to get electable people, I agree with you, Cal. They have to be good, clean candidates, but electability is important. We have to be smart about it. We have to be calculating, and we have to be clear, promote people who we can sell. And I hate to say it that way, but that's the truth.
What are we selling on their behalf, though? Are we selling on their behalf? Are we selling famous media coverage in their past? Are we selling glamour?
We're selling the person, mm-hmm. but you have to have someone who's saleable. Miss America is always going to be a gorgeous woman. And I know that that's a radical example, but what I'm saying to you is that we need to look carefully about who is the most electable. And all of the candidates that we support, we want to have carry the mantle of our ideals. I mean, obviously, we want to be inclusive. We want laws that protect the people in our society who need protecting. We need to have safeguards for folks so that they don't fall through the cracks with health or financially. We need to help women who have been abused. I mean, we need to do all of those things. We need to have candidates who will do that. Let's be careful about the face that we put on that, because that has to be sold. As someone who has done that for a living, I can tell you that it's really, really important.
I'm a consumer of news, rather big time, I'd say. I watch it a lot. And, you know, in response to what could be done, I personally would like to be targeted as a smart person, a person who is caught up on the news, who knows what's going on, who'd like a little depth of analysis, who can think for herself, form her own opinions, like someone to lay down the basis for one opinion versus another opinion. I'd like my mind to be targeted, not my salad.
I hear that. Well, I think we're just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for coming and having such a wonderful discussion. Go around and say our names one more time. I'm Lee.
I'm Maria.
Lori.
Kathy.
Doris.
Calla.
And thank you all for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.